Is everybody back?
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much. Can we proceed over to your CFO?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm hoping it's myself that can speak to it.
The sound is not that great.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'd also want to acknowledge the Honorable Deputy Minister. Chair, maybe before we present, I request that you allow me to convey our condolences as a department to the committee on the sudden passing of the late Honorable Kang. She has always challenged us as a department to do more and better, and we missed her engagement. I also thought it would be opportune to also welcome the recovery of both Honorable Self and Justice Cameron, and we hope them a further speedy recovery as from the department, Chairperson. I'd want to just indicate, Chair, that the CDC strategic management will give an overview on our APPs. We have submitted the presentation, so I've requested him not to go into detail, but to deal with it at a high level. I've also requested the CFO to do same so that we can engage with the honorable members on matters of clarity. In his presentation, Chair, he will cover the three questions posed by honorable attendees. With that, I'd like to hand over to CDC Katenga. Over to you, CDC.
thank you for this. Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. The presentation that you have before you is basically a summary of what is contained in our annual performance plan. As Commissioner has indicated, I will just touch on key themes that we would want to lift as have been raised by the Minister, and also as a department we feel that we need to place focus in order for us to have the change that the Honorable Janchi has also referred to. But maybe before I go to the slides, I just wanted to give a context in which this plan was finalized and the circumstances that influenced how we arrived at the performance indicators and targets. I think the first one is from an economic perspective that I think are all fully aware that there was a slow performing economy prior to March 2020, and the hard lockdown exacerbated the issues of economic growth, which occasioned budget cuts in responding to COVID, but also other matters which my colleague, the CFO, will articulate when he comes in. The two areas that, from a performance and a risk point of view, that I would like to raise at this stage is the fact that given the current economic environment, should it persist, then the risk of unemployment increasing is quite high. And that in itself could give rise to crimes of need and greed being committed. And that being the case, we could find ourselves having a rise in the remand detention population within the correctional services. The other side to it is also, if we look at the crime stats, where the indication from 2019 was that there was a general reduction, but in terms of serious crimes, there was an increase. And as Judge Cameron mentioned earlier, the minimum sentencing rules or the minimum sentencing laws would mean that we would have more people serving longer sentences under that regime. So that is a risk if the current economic situation persists, which we have considered. But also having considered that, we also know that there are opportunities within that. The first area being that we have indicated that corrections is a societal problem or a societal matter to deal with. And therefore, the opportunity going forward is, and I think with the assistance of the committee as well, is to ensure that across government, the public sector, civil society, that we ensure that we assist in the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders, but also, I think more importantly, is addressing the underlying causes of crime, which in itself cannot be a corrections responsibility only. So it is something that would need to be taken up. And from a correctional services perspective, we have a social reintegration framework that seeks to formalize and actually advance that. But I'll also speak to that later on. The other area is also that of alternative sentencing, given the issue that I raised earlier of crimes of need, in that there's an opportunity, if there's collaboration in the JCPS cluster and across all the clusters, in utilizing alternative sentencing regimes in order to alleviate the pressures on the correctional system, but also in terms of assisting in social reintegration as well. And that is also covered in the social reintegration framework of the department, but the spirit of it is that it becomes a government-wide and also societal-wide intervention. In addressing or in responding to the cluster, the JCPS cluster's economic recovery plan, we have also identified that in terms of contributing to community development and economic development, the agricultural assets and the production assets of the department can be utilized to galvanize the productive capacity of the economy in conjunction with the rest of the cluster. So that's an opportunity that has been put forth in the cluster recovery plan, which is also part of the broader national economic recovery plan and availability framework that has been mentioned by the minister and which the members have requested that we have further engagement with them on as we go forward. So that will be articulated therein. The other factors that have influenced the planning is the health environment and our internal performance environment. And once again, common cause for the 2020-21 financial year, the hard lockdown that prevailed between quarter one and quarter two actually meant that our performance levels on our performance indicators dropped drastically in terms of the requirements to to observe the COVID-19 protocols. And given that the interventions of corrections are very tactile and interpersonal, we were impacted quite greatly. Over quarter three and quarter four, as the restrictions were lowered, we saw a slight increase in our performance levels. However, the indication is that if we look at from 2019 to 2020, we achieved 89% of our targets on the performance indicators. The indication for the 2020-21 financial year is that that performance level has dropped to around the 63% mark, which was occasioned by the issues that I've just articulated. So given that understanding, the targeting levels have also taken that into consideration. We must just indicate that in terms of managing the pandemic, we developed standard operating procedures that have assisted the department to ensure that we contain the spread of the virus within our environment amongst the inmates and officials. And we have currently a 97% recovery rate, and we have a cumulative of 11,434 cases, and to date, 246 fatalities. Whilst every fatality is indeed regrettable, we would like to also just indicate that the population of employees and offenders totals at about 179,000. So the indication of the recovery rate of 97% and the fatalities, which are indeed regrettable, but the department's reaction, the timely reaction to managing the pandemic has yielded reasonable results. The opportunities that we have identified from that is that we need to look at modifying or changing our operating model and placing more reliance on technologies that will assist us in managing the issues of the pandemic as it stands currently, but also becoming more efficient in the use of technology. And therefore that is reflected also in the APP, which I will talk to shortly. So maybe just in terms of if we are looking at what have we done that is going to drive the change going forward. For the 2020-21 financial year, there were the two frameworks that I've referred to earlier, which is the self-sustainability and the social reintegration. The spirit of those two is to ensure that on the one side, we utilize productive capacity for consumption within the department and also to drive economic development in the areas or in the sphere of influence of the department, which would be contributing towards the district development model, amongst others. And also the social reintegration framework, which would be looking at how do we partner better across society, and that's from government through to civil society, in ensuring that everybody plays a role in reducing repeat offending. So those frameworks have been approved, and the implementation is now going to roll forward in the 2021-22 financial year. So the rollout of these two frameworks is what is actually going to have an exponential drive in terms of ensuring that we transform how corrections is delivered. I think given that background, Chair, I would like to maybe indicate that I will be moving to part C of the presentation, which is looking at our performance measures. Maybe just to state up front, first of all, we can start on slide 8, but I'll talk to that just now. Our core legislated indicators, which the committee is familiar with, around security, offender management, rehabilitation, care, and social reintegration remain as they have been. So the issues of reducing security incidents such as escapes, injuries based on assaults and deaths, the issues of reducing overcrowding, ensuring that offenders are considered by parole boards, the issues of correctional programs and formal education, provision of care, and psychological, social, and religious interventions, all those indicators will remain. The targets have been looked at in terms of our current paradigm of delivering services manually and having to adhere to the protocol, but the targets are still as have been, and therefore I will not go into detail on those. However, I would just like to indicate that in terms of our plan, our strategic plan, the revised strategic plan, we are still contributing to the National Development Plan, and I'll articulate those. And then also the district delivery, the district delivery model, or the district development model. We are also gearing our management areas to be aligned to the district in order for us to be able to contribute directly at a district level. And again, the self-sustainability and the social integration frameworks are designed to leverage on that. So if I may take you to the next slide. Okay. So on this slide, we're saying that as part of our mandate and in contributing to the medium-term strategic framework, Chapter 12 of the NDP, which talks about building safer communities, in the MTSF under Priority 6, Social Cohesion and Safer Communities, this is where we contribute directly. And under Program 5, Community Corrections, we have the indicators that talk to the percentage of parolees and probationers without violations of their conditions, and the number of victims participating in restorative justice processes. If we go to the next slide, where we're talking about the NDP Chapter 3, this is not a direct contribution of the department, but we are supporting in terms of economic transformation and job creation. The performance indicators that we have that are supporting this is the number of economic opportunities facilitated for parolees and probationers, percentage of youth employed within the department, percentage compliance with employment equity targets, and the percentage of tenders above 13 million that would be awarded to designated groups. The next area where the department contributes indirectly is on Chapter 9 and Chapter 10. In terms of the MTSF, that is Priority 3, which speaks to education, skills, and health. The indicators there are the percentage of sentence offenders with correctional sentence plans having completed programs, percentages of offenders participating in long occupational skills programs, and short occupational skills programs, and the percentage of offenders participating in TVET college programs. So that is what we have articulated in the five-year plan, and we are continuing to contribute to that. Maybe just to indicate that the indicators that I'm going to be talking about have certain themes that have been emphasized both by the committee, our principals, and we have recognized that as management and as a department to say these are core areas of focus in order to ensure that the delivery of the mandate is ensured. And the themes are around good governance, self-sustainability and community development, as well as managing COVID-19. So I'll take you to slide 30. So in ensuring good governance, we are still going to continue ensuring that there's consequence management in terms of managing issues of maladministration and curbing the issues around fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditure. And in doing so, we're going to ensure that the percentage of investigations that are completed for reported allegations is maintained and is increased from 50 to 60% over the 3-year period, and also the percentage of officials charged and found guilty for corrupt activities, the target of 95% will be maintained over the period. If we go to the next slide 31, I think maybe there just to emphasize the issue around the percentage of youth employment within the department is something that will also be emphasized over the MTF period. If I may take you to slide 32. I think the minister also raised this in his in his overview around the audit outcomes, that for the 2021-22 year, we're looking at an unqualified audit opinion with reduced findings, and then in the subsequent year, a clean audit outcome. In terms of taking the self-sustainability model forward, we have an indicator which talks to the business case for revenue generation and retention mechanism, and the business case is to be finalized in the 2021-22 financial year. And after that, we have the percentage of tenders above 30 million awarded to designated groups. We are indicating that the target there is 30% over the three-year period. If we go to slide 33, and this is talks to the IT modernization or the technology modernization within the department. I think the one that I'd like to emphasize is the one-off percentage of sites installed with local area network infrastructure. And that is talking to network infrastructure that supports that is the backbone for the technologies that we intend to implement. There was a matter raised of saying that there are certain areas where the network is not up to scratch. An indicator of this nature talks to us upgrading the network infrastructure in order for us to be able to roll out the modern technologies across all our correctional centers and community corrections. So I thought I would just lift that one there. And then if you could go to slide 43. On slide 43, I think that it was just the last indicator there on the manufacturing of face cloth masks. That talks to also the managing of costs within the procurement of PPE for the department, but also contributes to skills development where the offenders are involved in the manufacturing of the masks. So that is also one area where there is demonstrated change in the approach. The next one, if we could go to slide 48. Here we are just indicating, based on my introduction, on the management of COVID within the corrections environment. There are the two indicators at the bottom there, percentage of identified inmates tested for COVID. We are saying that is 100% that we're going to ensure that the testing covers. And then the percentage of inmates who have recovered from the coronavirus, the target is at 85%, which is quite conservative because our actual performance demonstrates that the recovery rate is actually at 97% currently. If we could go to slide 53. There we are talking about the number of victims and offenders participating in restorative justice programs. But I think more importantly is the number of economic opportunities facilitated for offenders, parolees, and probationers. Implicit in that, as was raised by the minister, and which is going to be actually monitored at an operational level, is the number of economic opportunities for victims associated with the offenders and parolees and probationers who are participating in those opportunities. And then the number of parolees and probationers participating in community initiatives is also a key issue in terms of contributing to the district development model. I think, Chair and members, those were the areas I wanted to highlight, which are a change from the legislated indicators that we have had historically and will continue because we are obliged to implement in terms of our legislation. So, Chairperson, maybe at this juncture, let me hand over to the CFO so that he can talk us through the numbers behind these indicators.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister and Honorable Members. My presentation starts at slide 61, which deals with the overview of the national expenditure, estimate of national expenditure. As my colleague CDC Katenga has indicated, there is due to the sluggish economy as well as the impact of COVID, the department and many other departments have experienced budgetary cuts. Overall, if we look at the departmental expenditure, the budget is expected to remain fairly the same as last year, which it increased marginally from 25.2 billion in 2021-22 to 25.6 billion in 2023-24. If we look at the, in terms of the spending, an estimated 58.4%, which is 44.7 billion, over the MFF period is on the incarceration programs, which I will indicate the breakdown later on. 67%, which is 51.5% of the department's expenditure over the MTEF, is earmarked for compensation of employees. And then this is an indication that the department is labor intensive, where almost more than two-thirds of our budget goes towards compensation of employees. However, Cabinet approved reductions to the departmental baseline amounting to 11 billion over the medium term, and that is 3.3 billion in the year 21-22, 4.3 billion in 2022-23, and 3.4 billion in 23-24. In terms of the next slide, majority of the cuts that I indicated in terms of the 11 billion, that is mainly on compensation of employees. And the impact thereof, as we indicate there, is that we are going to see a reduction in terms of funded posts, which will reduce from 37,806 in 2021-22 to 36,809 in 2023-24. So if we look at over the period, we are projecting that due to the cut, there will be less resources to fund posts up to the in the outer year. And the impact of that, Chairperson and Honorable Members, is that in order to, it will affect our ability to offer the core services such as rehabilitation, and also will also affect our momentum in terms of our implementation of the self-sufficiency and sustainability projects, primarily because they also require human resources or capacity for us to implement such. While these major cuts, we have as a department protected the three programs, which is rehabilitation, care, and social reintegration, by ensuring that there is growth over the MTEC in terms of the allocated resources. The program administration has experienced a cut or the reduction over the year. It decreases by 5% over the MTEF. On slide 63 is just the numbers in terms of the estimates per program. Just to emphasize that there is really no increase in terms of the allocation. If we look at the bottom line, total expenditure estimates 2021-22, the allocation is 25.2 billion. When we move to 2022-23, it's 25.4 billion, and the outer year is 25.5 billion. What is important to note is that all these allocations for the next 3 years are actually lower than what was allocated in 2020-21 financial year. In terms of the program, I just want to indicate on slide 65, as I indicated, the administration program takes 18.4% of the total vote. However, we've reduced it by 5% over the medium term. Majority of the items where we were cut is on compensation. We decreased by 3.3 billion over the medium term, but this will have an impact on the management and support functions, which are required for purposes of even achieving the clean audit outcomes, because that's where your HR, your finance, your governance, assurance services will be heavily impacted. But as part of the reorganization or the new structure, that's where management will be putting a response in that regard. Other items under goods and services, such as subsistence and travel, fleet services, have been reduced because of the new way of doing things. We are now using more of the technology than having physical meetings. On program incarceration, Chairperson, it's important just to indicate that this program takes 58% of the total vote. It has got a marginal growth of just under 0.5%, because we're trying to protect the other three programs which we deem them as very crucial. This program also suffered major cuts over the MCAF in terms of the compensation of employees budget by 7.3 billion. There's also a program of facilities under this main program, which is land and buildings, where it received a cut of 728 million over the MTF, and this is mainly on projects that had not been contracted, where we had to pause those projects. The remainder of the budget cuts were mainly on transfers and subsidies for service termination. Chairperson, but it's important because this is one of our, from a value point of view, incarceration takes a large chunk of our budget. But within this program, it's important to indicate that there are four sub-programs under this program. That is security operations, which deals with securing safety within security within our correctional facilities. Then there's also the facilities program, which takes in the majority the issues of payments of accommodation charges to public works. Secondly, the issues of leases that are required for mainly office spaces for regions and head office. Then there's also an element of remand detention, which is a function that is not more of rehabilitation, but we have a mandate to also detain remandees. So that's where the money also goes through. Eating away our resources from a remand detention point of view. But at the heartbeat of the correctional services, there's also a program within this, sub-program within this program called offender management. And offender management, I'm saying, is the heartbeat of correctional system, in that on admission of inmates, there is assessments that are done within this program. There's also the issue of development of sentence plans. At the same time, there's also case management committees that form part of ensuring that an offender has a path designed at program two incarceration, but implemented by the other programs, which is your rehabilitation, including correctional programs, skilling, and so forth. So I wanted to contextualize what is within incarceration. It may appear bloated, but it's got diverse sub-programs within it. On rehabilitation is expected to spend 6.8 billion over the MTF, and that is just under 9% of the total budget. We've protected this program and ensured that it has a huge growth of 5.5% over the medium term as compared to the 2017-18 MTF. The major allocation, which is 5 billion, which is 73% of the program, goes towards compensation of employees, and the remaining 28%, which is 1.8 billion, is on skilling and rehabilitation of offenders. Just to move on to the next program, that is nutrition, care, which has got two sub-programs in nutritional services, as well as health and hygiene services. The program is expected to spend 7.69 billion over the MPEF, which is just over 10% of the total growth. The average growth year is just over a percentage, but the bulk of the budget cuts were on compensation of employees, which decreased by 82 million over the medium term. We tried by all means not to tamper with this program relative to the others, because within this program there's also resources required to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. The last program is social reintegration on slide 69, where it is expected to spend 3.6 billion, which is 4.5% of the total growth. While all other programs are increasing, this one we consider it at just under 4% growth. Because it's also labor intensive due to the issue of supervision of parolees, probationers, the 90% of this budget at 3.2 billion is part of the compensation of employees. Chairperson, that is the presentation in terms of the overview of the budget. Thank you very much.
Commissioner? Do you want to add, or we can open for questions?
Thank you, Chair. We can open for questions at this point, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. DM, do you want to add anything before we open for questions?
No, Chair. You can go to questions.
Thank you very much. Members, who would want to ask questions, let me note your hands. I have Honorable Self, Honorable Horn, Honorable Belmanivo Drachens, Honorable Masipo Dele.
I'm sorry, I can't lift my hand, so please put me down as well.
And then Honorable Glenis Breitenberg.
Thank you.
What is the problem, Honorable Breitenberg?
Sorry?
What is the problem? You can't raise your hand?
I can't, for the moment, find the button. It's just myself being technologically challenged.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Thank you.
I think the DA is injured.
No. You remember, I know where you live. I'm coming for you.
She's fighting to be a mayor of Cape Town.
Oh, hell no.
Okay. Honorable James Duff.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask a number of questions, if I may. The first one is that in 2011, Parliament passed the Correctional Matters Amendment Bill, and part of that bill sought to compel the Department of Correctional Services to release remand detainees after a period of 2 years automatically. This provision, Section 49G of the Correctional Services Act, has yet to be promulgated. What I'd like to know is, when is it anticipated that Section 49G will be promulgated, and what will the effect of this be on overcrowding in remand centres? Secondly, on the slide for the results change, the assumption is made that overcrowding can be reduced to under 50%. Further on in slide named strategic focus incarceration, it is stated that overcrowding has reduced to 17%. I'd like to know how these figures arrived at, because it's certainly not my experience of correctional centres that have that level of overcrowding. Then under social integration, there's mention of the facilitation of economic opportunities for parolees and probationers by the department, which is aimed at assisting them to secure employment, which they struggle to do due to their criminal record status. I'd like to know what this means and how successful then is it. Then the fourth question is, why is there a reduction in the targets for escapes, assaults, unnatural deaths, and remand detainees subject to continuous risk assessments? Fifthly, there's mention made of the percentage of offenders participating in long occupational skills program and short occupational skills programs. What are these programs? How long are they? And to what extent do they equip inmates with useful skills to get employment after release? And then finally, the percentage of parolees and probationers who adhere to their release conditions is set at 99%. I'd like to know how that squares with the strategic risk register, which states that it is a risk, or one of the risks is an ineffective reintegration processes and systems. How is the figure measured, and how reliable is the target? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Self, Honorable Horn. Honorable Horn. Honorable Nivo Trachens.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the department for your presentation. I'd like to go to slide 56. Slide 56. Has the strategic risk register. And then the point which starts with inadequate security and safety systems for inmates, and then inadequate management systems and processes, inadequate access to rehabilitation, psychological services, and inadequate, etc. So I'd like to know if the department can give us solutions for each of those points, or the risk, the strategic risk register. What will the department do? What do they have planned for each of those inadequacies to be resolved? Then secondly, the youth employment, slide 81, you put 20%. So 20% of what? You put the percentage, but there's no numbers there for us to get an understanding. 20% of what number? How many people will be there? Then I would like to applaud the department, your testing of COVID at 100%. I'd like to applaud you, but I'm a little bit concerned because I don't see the percentage of how many TB cases and TB testing is done and the recovery, not the recovery really, but the testing, because TB is really contagious, and especially when there's a situation of overcrowding, it can become worse. So I'd like to see TB testing as well. And then also, I don't see the screening for diabetes and high blood pressure. Well, I see it's not at 100%. You put 90%. Why are all incoming inmates not screened for those tests or screened for those illnesses? And then Chair, I just need to check on my device. Okay. I can't find it really, but there was a number of those victims, the victim empowerment, the number was drastically reduced. I think it was over 3,000 previously, but now it's been reduced to 1,000. So that's a lot less victim empowerment. So I just wanted to know why the reduction. And I also want to know, since the Department of Social Development came up with the bill of the victim empowerment support, DCS and the Department of Social Development, how do they work together on the victim empowerment support and on that bill? And just one more, looking for a job. Under rehabilitation, the program rehabilitation, travel and subsistence, it increased from 22.2 million to 24.1 million. Now, this increased even though we have COVID restrictions on traveling, so I just wanted to know why the increase and what necessitated the increase on that. And the department made changes for improving the youth centers. What is the estimated cost for the improvement of the youth center? Previously, it was stated that that center will be converted into a female-only offender. Is that still standing? Is that going to be the case still? And what are the plans to go looking forward? Those are my questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. What happened to the chair?
So while the
headline
is suspended.
Yes.
But then
you
resigned.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on here.
Honorable Jale.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought that maybe you are also affected by load shedding.
No. It's just the technology, like Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Chairperson. No problem, Chairperson. I think I had my questions here, quite a number of them, but I think I'm going to change. I just want to, my questions will be based on how can we think outside the box and be able to beat the issue of budget cuts and also the reductions that we are experiencing now, especially due to COVID-19. You know, Chairperson, I'm sitting here thinking that if we are going to go like this for the next 2 or 3 years that we are left with, oh my God, I'm going to go insane, Chairperson, help me. Because we can't be repeating things, you know, coming and our plans also not getting much of progress of what we are doing. We must work together and find out exactly, so that the department helps us also, so that we don't get stressed. Otherwise, we are going to look for the psychologist to assist us. Because we need progress. I'm yearning for the day when the department will come, Chairperson, and say, you know, and all of us, we are happy and say, things are going well. Though I know that the country is facing a lot, but at least be able to you know, talk positive and see that we are getting somewhere in a faster pace. That was my introduction, Chair. Let me just come to the first point that I wanted to raise, Chairperson, is on part one. That is just as an introduction of the presentation, but it's coupled with the comment of Judge Cameron before he left. It is on the issue of social cohesion, Chairperson. And I feel that, Chairperson, I'm not sure, I just want to find out from the department as we are going forward having these new targets. Do we have a target that talks to the issue of social cohesion? I'm thinking of the comments that Judge Cameron gave us today about that gentleman, or is it a gentleman or a she, where he called an official with a K word. And to me, it's like it can be a strategy for this guy doesn't want to work or be amongst other inmates. Maybe he would want to do something very drastic or say something very serious so that it can be put aside alone. So it's just a comment, just to find out, do we have a program maybe which talks to, you know, the country outside? We are trying to unite this country and have a rainbow, a true rainbow country. Can we also have a program within our facilities that talks to that? That is my first question, Chairperson. Also, I think the presentation, when I was listening to the presenter saying the bigger chunk of our amount goes to an incarceration, but at least he did gave me comfort when he was breaking down the items that falls under that heading. But the I think that I want to ask Chairperson some questions in relation to the issue of the leases. I think I'm trying to have some areas where we can find some savings, Chairperson. I just want to find out if maybe is it possible that we do away with the issue of leases and use the government buildings? Because I'll tell you why, Chairperson. There are so many government facilities that are just laying there in our municipalities that are not serviced, you know, or being, I don't know this name, this term that we are using, maintained, or we can rehabilitate them if it's the correct way, so that we can use them, so that we save, Chairperson. You know, this COVID is really hitting the country very hard. So if we can look as a department into those areas and see how can we save, assist the government to save. And then also on the issue of the facilities, infrastructure, Chairperson, on that area, the last time when the department was here, was also reporting, we wanted to know about the corruption that is taking place or was taking place if it's no longer there, if possible. I want to know also what is happening. I know that maybe now we are talking plans. So so that we can know, you know, going forward, we are able to make sure that we don't have the hangover, things that we still have to go back and say we are planning forward, but we still have this rooms that of corruption or the wasteful expenditures and the companies milking the government. And then I just want to come also on the report of the AG. I want just to find out from the department chairperson, there were findings from the report of the Auditor General on the issue of compliance. They were not happy about compliance monitoring. They cited that it was ineffective. This is another area, chairperson, that we cannot plan go forward when we still have outstanding things that we need to go and deal with them. Another finding, chairperson, it was in 2029 and 2020, they cited 69% of fruitful and wasteful expenditure. Whilst we want the budget increase and all that, can we deal with these issues? Which is the last one, chairperson, they were saying another finding was that there was no sufficient evidence found that disciplinary steps were taken against those officials who were involved in the irregular and expenditures. I just want to find out if maybe the department, for us to be able to go forward, what have we done? Do we have plans maybe that are incorporated into this plan going forward in order to deal with those issues, chairperson, and see if maybe going forward we will be able to get more progress faster, so that some of us, we don't come here and also come back and talk about these things, which are really very stressful if we have to repeat one thing always. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Jela. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question. There appears to be a problem with feeding in the Boksburg prison. I'm getting complaints from inmates in the Boksburg prison that they do not get fed properly, that their rations are substandard, and they don't get their rations at all. So can somebody please just explain to me what's going on there? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Breitenbach. Committee Secretariat, can you look at Mr. Horn? He is finding difficult to unmute, although he unmutes on his side, but on your side he is still muted. He wants to participate. Honorable...
Noted, sir.
Yes. Honorable Horn? In the meantime, can we have Honorable Janji? There seems to be no one. As we are still trying to get hold of Honorable Horn, can we have the department responding to some of these questions, first to all of the questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll get the CDC community corrections to start, and then the different program heads will respond to the question, Chairperson. So we'll start with the community corrections.
CDC community corrections.
Afternoon, Honorable Members, and thank you very much for the questions. I'll start with the question on facilitation of economic opportunity for offenders, parolees and probationers. So with regard to that indicator, the challenge that we've experienced, as the honorable member has indicated, we do have a challenge of getting employment for our parolees and probationers, especially with regard to the issue of stigmatization, the issue of criminal record expungement, which as the department, we are working on that, and we still have to work with other sister departments to ensure that the issue of criminal expungement is being attended to. But what we are doing in terms of that indicator is that we do partner with relevant stakeholders. We do partner with employers, whereby our parolees and probationers, they do attend the skills training. So we offer those skills to our offenders and parolees so that they will be in, we prepare them so that potential employers, they will be in a position to employ them. So the process will continue from incarceration before they get to community level. So when they are in communities, we also ensure that we partner with future employers. We make sure that they do attend training.
Advocate Mashabini. Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, National Commissioner and officials. I would just want to respond with regards to Honorable South.
Sorry, ma'am. We were still listening to Advocate Mashabini and she was cut off and we don't know what happened. And as we're trying to contact the commissioner and then you are appearing to be answering, is Advocate Mashabini done?
Sorry, Chairperson, I think CDC Community Corrections is with Advocate Mashabini. And I think there's a connectivity problem. So I don't know if we can get the next CDC to respond while they're trying to reconnect, Chair.
Okay, so we'll come back to her when she's reconnected or at the end. Let's have all the people who are with you, Commissioner, answering. Those that we have deployed to answer, then we'll go back to Advocate Mashabini. So that boardroom, is it part of those products that are done by the inmates?
Correct, Chairperson.
Yes.
That's very good. Okay. That's very good. Thank you very much. So your budget cuts can be alleviated through such programs, but that is quality furniture.
Thank you, Chairperson. Correct.
Okay.
Honorable Chairperson, my name is Cynthia Ramulipo. I'll be Chief Deputy Commissioner Human Resource, but I will also be responding to remand detention. The first question which was asked by the Honorable Safi with regards to the promulgation of the regulation on the correction. I would like to confirm that the department in 2012 February with effective of 1st of March did promulgate the correctional service regulation in terms of chapter 4, the management and safeguard of well-being of remand and Reg 26I on the migration incarceration period. Further to that, the department has been ensuring that Section 49G read together with the regulation is actually monitored, implemented
in terms of the referrals to the court. That we are doing it through the remand detention tool, which on the quarterly basis through our province in the regions, we are ensuring that they are actually making sure that the referrals are submitted to court on a monthly basis. And we do have also the breakdown in terms of the report feedback that we are getting. So I would like to confirm that it has been promulgated in terms of the correctional service regulation, which is read in terms of Reg 26I on the maximum incarceration period. And there's also a tool that we are currently utilizing in terms of that. And I just wanted to also indicate that it is assisting us in terms of the overcrowding strategy that we are having in indirect and indirectly in terms of referral. But however, we depend mostly on the court outcome in terms of the issues that has to do with the reduction of bail, the continuous detention, and also the case withdrawal. And sometimes it's about the releasing on warning. So with that, I just wanted to confirm that it has been promulgated with effective of the 1st of March 2012. I will then move to respond in terms of the presentation on the target of 20% in terms of the human resource target. The Correctional Service Learnership Program target of 2064, which will then help it to ensure that we comply with the COVID protocol. I just needed to indicate that that 20% is up about the target of 2064 learnership. With the reduction of the cost compensation of employees' budget, it got negative impact of us realizing the full target of 2064 going forward. But I would just want to indicate that the 20% of the target which has been indicated in terms of the annual APP is the figure is 2064. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you, National Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask CDC Incarceration if you can just speak if they are struggling with connection because they're in the Eastern Cape, Chair. I'll ask the CDC Strategic Management to respond to that.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you, National Commissioner. We are back online in terms of the connection. I am going to respond to the first question on long-term skills development programs. Our long-term skills development programs are implemented in partnership with TVET colleges. They are mainly located in the production workshops, farms and bakeries that we are rolling out as DTS. The enterprises that exist in our farms are utilized as sites for gaining experience and also in a formal way confirming the skills that would have been imparted to the offenders. For instance, if I may give an example, in our farms we've got an enterprise that focuses mainly on dairy farming. Now, our offenders on a daily basis are allowed, according to the numbers of the span that is determined for that day, to go into the dairy and be part of operations in that enterprise. The same applies to farming, to piggery farming, vegetable farming, broiler farming, and also the offenders are exposed to operations in our abattoirs. With regards to production workshops, we do work in furniture manufacturing and also in textile manufacturing. This, as I indicated, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, are informed by a formal tuition program that we enter into with our TVET colleges, and then our production sites are then utilized for experimentation and on-the-job training. There are programs that are formal education programs that we also implement that are reflected in our annual performance plan. The other issues that were raised are with regard to the TB testing. We are actually measuring the cure rate, and as of current, our TB cure rate is at 95.92%. The targeting at 90% is in line with the Department of Health and the United Nations 1990 targets. And it is in that context that we also when we do health tests when our offenders are admitted, we also test on diabetes and high blood pressure, but that is meant for us to be able to complete a balanced and comprehensive profile of an offender upon admission, and that helps us in putting together a program that can then be implemented as part of the sentence plan. Those were the issues that were raised, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Advocate Shirini.
Honorable Chairperson, the next presenter will be CDC Comco, who was cut off earlier.
Okay. I proceed, CDC.
Thank you, Honorable Members, and apologies for the technology that cut us off. So on the indicator on the number of victims reduced, previously what we did is that we have been performing on that indicator in terms of involving our victims in restorative justice processes. But for the previous financial year, we did not perform as per our target. The reason being that due to COVID, we had our standard operating procedures whereby during level 2 to 5, then restorative justice processes were not implemented. So for the current financial year, based on the reasons that COVID-19 is still with us, we have reduced the target to 3,500. And the other reason that made us to reduce the target is that we do not have a permanent structure within the department that is looking at the restorative justice processes. So we do have social auxiliary workers who were appointed on contract to trace victims and ensure that they prepare those victims for participation. So those social auxiliary workers were on contracts and 90% of those contracts expired. So hence we have reduced the indicators to that number, but we are currently working on in terms of prioritizing social appointment of social auxiliary workers within the department. We are working on the organizational structure to ensure that those will be prioritized. And the other option that we also did is that we have submitted for presidential stimulus employment for them to consider employing the youth in terms of those social auxiliary workers so that they can assist us in terms of achieving the indicator of the indicator on victim participation. We are on this indicator, we are also working with the Department of Social Development, whereby we also refer our cases to social development. So we are in partnership with social development working together. So for the current financial year, as indicated by our Honorable Minister, we are also going to ensure that we provide opportunities, economic opportunities for our victims, but that is not included in our APP. So we are going to do that operationally and will provide progress in terms of what is being done in terms of having those economic opportunities for our victims also. Thank you, honorable members, from my side, those were the questions.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. Maybe just there's one or two that I would want to respond to. I think honorable self asked about the overcrowding of 17%. I think prior to the special remission and the special parole dispensation and the remission of sentences, our population was sitting in excess of 155,000. The population has since dropped to 140,948. So the calculation of that 17% is based on the 140,000 plus minus over a bed space capacity of 120,000. So that's how we arrive at the 17%, and the drop was based on those two events. On the issue of why the targets on the security indicators are reducing, we are actually measuring the reduction of adverse events. So we're saying that we want to reduce the incidences of unnatural death, escapes, and injuries from assaults. So that's why the target reduces over time. I think there was the one on the 97% of parolees and probationers, the adherence to their conditions. What we're measuring there is to say whether there's been any revocation of parole or probation based on any contravention of conditions. And that is objectively verified. So therefore, it would be deemed to be effective and accurate, because it is based on monitoring records that we have. Honorable Niva Drachen, on the risk mitigation for the strategic risks, if we refer to pages 121 to 132 of the annual performance plan document, we do indicate what the strategic risks are. We also reflect on what our current controls are that are in place and what are the actions that we need to take in order for us to address the adequacy or to improve the adequacy of the current controls. So it is articulated there. The residual risk is currently high based on the current controls, but after we implement the corrective actions, then that should reduce the residual risk on all of those strategic risks, but it is all articulated on page 121 to 132. In terms of contributing to social cohesion, if we go to slide 9, We have indicated that in terms of our contribution to the medium-term strategic framework under priority 6, which refers to social cohesion and safe communities, our performance indicators under program 5, which is the parolees and probationers without violation, and victims and offenders participating in restorative justice, is how we contribute to social cohesion within the scope of the DCS mandate. That is how our contribution is articulated. Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll request the CFO to respond to some of the financial questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would want to respond to the question by Honorable Chairman regarding the increase in travel and subsistence under program rehabilitation. Just to indicate that program rehabilitation is one of the programs that we protected, ensuring that where there is a 5.5% increase over the medium term. But within program rehabilitation, we have what we call production workshops and agriculture, which is a component that will be enabling or supporting self-sufficiency. So the entire program has got growth in all fronts or in all items in the main, such as inventory for farming supplies, travel and subsistence, to actually ensure that the self-sufficiency strategy is not constrained from an implementation point of view. In the year, during the year, there will be a number of projects that will be implemented, so they require goods and services, as well as capital investment as well. Honorable Masega Jele posed a question regarding in two areas on the governance side, as well as the one on the leases, on whether it is possible to dwell with leases and use other unutilized government buildings. Chairperson, I think we do, where feasible, we do try to utilize buildings of other government departments, but there are instances where other government departments require more spaces, and then we are told to vacate the office to make way for other departments. And for the other department, in the main, we work within the justice cluster, the mainly Department of Justice in certain areas. But I might indicate, Chairperson, where there is two issues that we are doing on leasing. The Department of Public Works is busy in negotiating and renegotiating leases, where in part of our portfolio is also under renegotiation, so that we reduce the rates that we spend on leases. But secondly, where the management areas or precincts had previously been leasing externally or leasing private-owned facilities, we have taken steps to cancel those contracts and moving them back into the DCS-owned buildings. So we do. Then on the community corrections, that's where we utilize a lot of facilities such as the tribal councils and so forth, where we are trying to reduce any sort of expenditure. In the past, we've increased, I think community correction can assist in terms of all those service points where we are not spending any money, but we're utilizing other tiers of government to provide services in that regard. The other question was mainly on the ineffective compliance monitoring by the department as part of the findings, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. From a we are finalizing a compliance framework which will ensure that we have a proper consequence management framework in place. Secondly, we have also, in the past, most of the investigations have been done at the head office level, but we have since devolved those functions so that investigations on any non-compliant, such as footless whistling expenditure, are done at the source of occurrence, which will shorten the turnaround time as well as disciplinary processes. At the moment, the head office is assisting in terms of the backlog of cases, but going forward, that's where each and every region management area will be doing their own investigations on fruitless, wasteful, and any irregular expenditure. Thank you.
Can I thank you, Chair. I'll just ask the COC to cover the acting COC to cover the two areas that hasn't been covered yet, Chair, for one around the security and the question down for Breitenbach on Boxburg. Thank you. COC. Sorry, Chairperson, I will go. I'll just respond to the two questions, and if there if there are any other outstanding matters, we'll revert. But on the issue of security incidents, the reason that we never met the target last year was primarily because of the reduction in staff deployment, and then the unfortunate incident in Malmesbury, where 68 offenders escaped at one incident as a result of shortage of staff. I think that was the one incident and impacted on our security performance. On the issue of Boxburg, we've contacted the area commissioner, so we have been told that there is no shortage of rations of inmates, but this matter will be investigated to make sure we are able to come back to the committee if there had been such a situation. I can indicate, Jefferson, that there's a number of strategies that we've developed. We're in the process of finalizing a security strategy for the department that is going to be linked to both our gang reduction strategy, our counter-corruption strategy, and linked to the reviewed B order. We've reviewed our B order in the year under review. So our standard operating procedures with regard to offender management has now been entirely reviewed, Chairperson. Maybe just one point is we've adopted an approach to indicate that all our centres must be contraband-free zones, and we're now assessing our heads of centres on the performance, their performance in ensuring contraband-free zones. But all of that is reliant on the finalisation of our security strategy, which should be finalized within the next month. Maybe another point I can just indicate, the CFO spoke about leases, but we've also developed a master infrastructure plan that's really looking at our facilities throughout the country And this is designed in support of the National Spatial Development Framework, which in essence is designed to ensure that we contribute to peaceful, prosperous, and transformed South Africa. So I thought that I'll just add that at this point. I didn't know if there are any follow-up questions at this point, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Let me go back to Honorable Horn. Are you back, Honorable Horn? Not yet. Were you, Bonani, were you able to unmute Honorable Horn? Secretariat, were you able to unmute Honorable Horn?
No, we couldn't do it, Chairperson.
Okay. So what is the problem?
He is unmutable.
No, I think the problem is on his side. And,
okay. If I may just have a few questions on my side. Firstly, there are these two correctional facilities whose contracts are expiring in June 2026 and June 2027, respectively. What are the plans beyond this expiry of these contracts? And what lessons have you learned from having the two PPPs, managing the private participation programs? What have you learned? And how are you going to integrate those lessons into the system? That is one question. Then the other, the inmate-official ratio, what is the acceptable one and how far are you now with that one? And then the other one, it's on the communication increase, the budget. It has increased from 53 million to 55 million. And computer services have increased from 190 to 199 million. Whilst under machinery and equipment, there is a decrease from 314 million to 184.3 million. What are the underlining reasons for that? And then in your second quarter, under care program, you overspent by 54 million. You overspent by 54 million. And then also the under care program, your second quarter you underspent by 1.4 billion. Were you able to recover that from your second quarter to the third quarter? Those are my questions. Commissioner?
Chairperson, we'll just get the CFO to respond to those.
Thank you, Chairperson. With respect to the triple P's, we've got those two triple P's in Kutama, Sutumure, and Mangaung. The National Commissioner has already appointed a team which is going to look at transitioning and taking over the facilities. So there's different phases that will be going through. Part of it is also ensuring that the infrastructure is intact, because the concession agreement states that they must be handed over to the state when in the same form as if as if it was during inception. So there is a team in place from the various regions. We have included head office, which deals with contract management. We've also included the regions, because the one in Witrikas or Makado is under the Limpopo Mpumalanga region, whereas the one in Mfontein is under Free State Northern Cape region. So there is a team in place that is working on that. The objective is to take them over, and they will not be outsourcing anymore. It will be the state running the facilities, both of the facilities. On the decrease in machinery and equipment, I think the major reasons for the reduction over the years is because of the budgetary cuts. We had to reprioritize in certain areas to avoid having limited resources in computer services and communication. The increase is mainly as a result of the new way of doing things. As indicated in our presentation, we've reduced subsistence, travel and fleet on most of the programs in order to support the use of technology, and hence the increase in those communication, which is the devices, such as your 3Gs and so forth, for connectivity, as well as computer services. The underspending throughout the year in 2020-21, you are, Chairperson, you are quite correct. We have been underspending over the quarters up to quarter three. For the year under review up to March, we also underspent the primary reserve before audit or finalization of the preparation of financial statements. We are sitting at 97% of spending. So we are going to underspend when we finalize the financials. Where we were delayed is mainly on the project, because at some point there was no in-bring levels, lockdown levels 5 and 4 were not advertised tenders, which delayed most of the procurement in facilities through both our implementing agents, which is IDT as well as DPW. But even ourselves internally, we were unable to also do a procurement on the regular purchases that we do as a department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On the other matters, I don't know if I can beg your indulgence that we provide a written response. Yes, Chair.
On which one?
The inmate official ratio, please, Chairperson.
Okay. Were you able to answer the three questions that were asked by Honorable Janji? What is the APP? What is the APP represent? In fact, what is the leap forward that is represented by the APP? What are you losing in the APP as a result of COVID and failure to spend, capacity risk that it might affect these plans?
Chairperson.
Honorable Jala.
Before a commissioner comes in, there's a question that also accepted about the ratio. There's another one that I've sent before the one of the ratio. The one for conducting 576 COVID-19 awareness sessions. amongst officials. There's a question that I posted on the chat. If they can also look into that one and answer.
Do you mind repeating it?
Okay. The department is intending to conduct about 576 COVID-19 awareness sessions among the officials. So the question was, why only officials? And the second one was, how did the department come about this number of 576? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And your team?
Chair, apologies, Wilma.
Okay. Honorable Nico Jachan.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry to interrupt. My question was regard to the youth center that was renovated and the maintenance. I don't think it has been responded to, but they are able, if they can, they can respond in writing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. On the last matter with regard to the youth centre, it is still going to remain the youth centre, and I think the work should be finished this financial year. So I think around that one. On the issue of the COVID-19 awareness systems, we do awareness for both officials and vendors.
Yes.
So that happens on an ongoing basis. On the issue of the on the issue of the calculation of the 576, I think we can come back on how we made that calculation. I don't have that at hand, Chairperson. And around the issue of the offender official ratio, it's quite a complex calculation, and we have just reshuffled our CDCs around HR and remand. So if we are just able to come back at a later stage, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you. So does that mean that amongst your CPC, no one can answer those questions now? Commissioner?
Chairperson, the DC strategic plan is going to be able to talk to the COVID-19 calculation, medical calculation.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Chairperson and honourable members. In terms of the COVID-19 awareness session, that indicator actually started in the 2021 financial year. And for the year under review, we actually conducted a total of 935 awareness sessions for officials across the department. And for the upcoming financial year, we will be conducting those sessions for the remaining officials. So at the end of quarter one, we will actually have conducted that for the entire department. So in those sessions, we make officials aware of the pandemic, what are the requirements in terms of the department, standard operating procedures, etc. And by the end of quarter one, we would have done it intensively across the department. We also do it at center level for inmates as well. Thank you.
And then, Commissioner, in terms of your infrastructure project, what measures do you put in place to ensure that when you receive a facility or any infrastructure project, you have value for money? Because we have experienced in government where monies are spent on infrastructure projects, and immediately the building is handed over to the department, you find that there are serious structural defects which will require double the money to fix that. So how do you ensure that you
you get value for money for all the buildings that in fact for your build program, to ensure that contractors hand over something according to your specs and something that is fit for purpose.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the one thing we did within the area of facilities was the fact that we recruited capacity within the facility management area of project managers, engineers, and different capacities. We therefore are no longer dependent merely on public works and waiting for them to hand over. We now co-manage those projects to ensure that we come in on time and within budget, Chairperson. So that is the one matter. On the issue of official ratio, Chairperson, I'm advised that it is 1:5. But Chair, I really want to just go and look at that. I don't want to give you a figure that I haven't interrogated. So I'm withdrawing the last answer I've given you because you can hold me accountable. So I really withdrawing that one, Chairperson, if you allow me. Sorry.
No, I think that is noted, Commissioner. Any outstanding questions or replies? If none, are members satisfied that we can move to the closing remarks by the Deputy Minister?
Yes, Chair.
So all your questions have been answered. Deputy Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the honorable members and the colleagues from the Department of Correctional Services and CHICS. Well, once again, we stand to express our gratitude to the Portfolio Committee for the probing questions that are there to assist us in improving our performance as a department. Obviously, there are issues that must be something of an irritation on the part of the Portfolio Committee, where, for instance, we keep talking about plans and strategies that we're working on when the Portfolio Committee and Parliament require information about what exactly has been done in order to improve on our delivery on the mandate of the department, which is to make sure that we contribute to a safe South Africa, which is not threatened by crime. We contribute to the rehabilitation and the correction of the conduct of the people who are put in our care as a result of them having broken the law and disrupted the organizational structure of our societies. As the ministry, we want to ensure that the chairperson of the deputy chairperson of the committee, something about a leap forward, that when we came into the department, the ministry, we said that we want a situation where these facilities are self-sustaining insofar, for instance, as ensuring that the buildings in which we detain these inmates are properly cared for, they're in a good condition, and that the farms and other places are looked after by the inmates themselves. We're looking at a situation where the food they eat is produced by the inmates. We're looking at a situation where the uniforms that they wear are made by the inmates themselves, including uniforms that can be used by the officials, because the officials are often complaining that the standard and quality of uniforms that they are using does diminish the stature of the department in the eyes of the community. And therefore, it is a leap forward that we want to ensure that it is achieved. We are now approaching the third year if you like, of our term, and we can't continue to be talking about what we are planning to do, what we are strategizing to achieve. We should be talking, when we come to the portfolio committee, about what has been achieved in terms of the plans that we've been talking about. The matter of TICs is something that ought to be finalized. For instance, the question of its accommodation, it's important that that be attended to. The question that has not been really raised in the meeting sharply is the question of the parole board chairpersons and deputy chairpersons, the conditions of their employment contracts, the terms and conditions in their employment contracts are unacceptable. They are in violation of the labor laws, basic conditions of employment acts. Kind of a situation where we have people who are in employment, but who can't take leave, because when they take leave, they are not going to be paid, even sick leave. And then they force themselves to continue to be at work when they are not in a position to do that kind of thing. So there are a number of things that we are working on, ensuring that they are addressed by the department. And with your assistance, I'm sure we'll be in a position to do what is expected of us. In those few words, once again, I want to thank the portfolio committee for giving us this opportunity to share with you as what it is that we are trying to do in the department, and also to gain the wisdom of your advices as to how we should take the department forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM, for those words. And thank you for attending this meeting, leading the delegation, and for answering all our questions that we have asked. One of the few areas that we think that you need to come back as the ministry to us, we were shocked some time back when we were dealing with the Correctional Services Bill, that the department, as old as Correctional Services, does not have a legal or a drafting unit. And we thought that as a response to that, we thought that the committee, in fact, we thought that the department had our horror and our dissatisfaction, and they were going to respond to that through the budget process. And it's not there. I mean, we're not getting the impression that there is a move towards that. And it's a point, it's a source of concern. Because why is this a concern to us? When democracy was born in 1994, we took a decision to have a doctrinal shift from a Department of Prisons to a Department of Correctional Services. And that necessitated that a lot of laws, standard operating procedures would need to change to reflect the new doctrine. Now, without a legal unit, you struggle to keep up with that. So we would really want to get a report as soon as possible as to what plans are you putting in place to ensure that that legal unit is established and is fully fledged within the Department of Correctional Services, or it is a shared service with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services if you cannot establish one. But we would want to ensure that, we want to know that the department is fully supported with a proper legal advice and drafting a capacity so that it is able to ensure that it meets the mandate that was set for it. The other issue that we think that the minister has made mention of it, and we have also made mention of it quite strongly, Deputy Minister, you call it a self-sustainability model. But I think that that is very self-limiting. It is more about subsistence living. The issue that the department should be asking itself, and I know that the department has the capability to do that, is to say, how does the department find its niche in the industrialization program of the country? One, through agro-processing. It will not be enough just to plow food, but how do we work with other departments, agriculture and trade and industry, to ensure that we are part of the value chain in the agro-processing sector? I know I can say without fear of contradiction that we are producing one of the best furnitures. And under the Department of Public Enterprises, we have SAFCOL that is responsible for timber. How do you cooperate with such SOCs to ensure that you expand your capacity and to ensure that you are also participating fully and meaningfully in the economy of the country in as far as manufacturing of furniture is concerned? So we are saying, don't think about sustainability. Think about active participation in the economy of the country. We are aware that, for instance, an SOC like Eskom gave birth to Transnet. So there is no reason why this department cannot give birth to a big, vibrant, economic, in fact, even SOCs or other forms of entities that can meaningfully participate in the economy. So the issues that you have raised, I mean, all the talents that we have raised that found their source in budget cuts, you have the capability to solve that. You have the capability to solve. I remember when the department was still a standalone department under former Minister Balfour. I think the Deputy Minister would be aware. They used to come to Parliament to display their office furniture, which was of high standard. There is no reason why the department cannot supply Jean and Richards and others and other companies. So we need to think big. We need to think about not only about giving skills to prisoners, but contributing towards the economic revival of our country. So I do think that some of these plans would be presented before the subcommittee, especially about the industrialization plans. Just taking your plans, just don't be inward looking. Look at the skill that you have, which I think is one of the best skills that you have. Look at that skill and say, how do we ensure that we make the skill available to our society? And on the infrastructure program, you have artisans, engineers from Transnet, Eskom, and Dinel, who have been trained by the state free of charge, who can be used to assist in the infrastructure build program to reduce the cost of that build programs. So we have thousands of them. So we must think creatively, how do we continuously reduce the cost by using what we have as the state? Because the biggest problem is that the state does, the right hand does not know what the left hand is capable of. There was an issue raised by Honorable Jelle about issues of leases. For instance, if I know that it would not really affect you, but I'm just illustrating a point. In Johannesburg, you have a Carlton Center, which was a hotel. It was one of the top hotels in the 80s.
it's a 30-story building. That building belongs to the state. It belongs to Transnet. Now it is vacant for more than a decade. I'm told that snakes have found refuge there. So it's one building that could have been used to the benefit of other departments and derive economic benefit. It is not. It is a refuge to snakes. So we have to think creatively as a government and to ensure that we reduce costs so that these issues of budget cuts can be, we can leverage them to ensure that we serve our people better. The biggest challenge, more than economic downturn, is the inability to be creative as leaders in government, either senior managers, or middle managers. We need to be creative. The resources are as not as bad as we make them to be, but the biggest challenge is our inability to think creatively. Thank you very much. Thank you, DM. Thank you to your team. I think the subcommittee will take it from there and get those plans from the department. Thank you, DM. You are muted.
I was there imitating you, Chairperson, saying thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Members, can we have a 10-minute break? Then we will start with the Office of the Chief Justice.
Oh.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We'll be excused. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, can the Office of the Chief Justice be the last one? I know that Honorable Glenis Breitenbach is not that well, so we don't want to detain members to a point where committee meetings are a source of their illness. The Office of the Chief Justice will be the last one.